Atomic and molecular transitions between different energy levels give rise to similar lines, and the signal is not exceptionally strong, so it's far from clear this is a real discovery. This lack of convincing evidence hasn't stopped some research based on axions or decaying dark matter as possible sources. We won't know until further data or theoretical work shows whether it was a fluctuation or background. The final putative signal that I want to mention, because it instigated the research I will shortly discuss, is a photon signal with 130 gigaelectron volts of energy, which early Fermi satellite data had initially seemed to suggest. This was certainly intriguing, given the similarity of the observed energy to the mass of the Higgs boson, which is about 125 gigaelectron volts. In light of the lack of a good astrophysical explanation, some astronomers suggested the signal might have originated from annihilating dark matter. I will say right up front that the evidence didn't stand the test of time or further data and is now discredited. But in trying to explain how the signal could possibly come about, my collaborators Matt Rees, Gigi Fan, Andrew Katz, and I ended up exploring an intriguing class of models that we almost certainly never would have stumbled across otherwise. As with many interesting scientific developments, the model turned out to be interesting for reasons beyond the initial motivation and led to the dark disk model I will soon explain. Dark matter at the LHC. Although looking like a less promising possibility these days, WIMPs might also show up at the Large Hadron Collider, the giant accelerator near Geneva that circles under the French-Swiss border. Protons circulate in opposite directions around a 27-kilometer circumference ring to collide with each other at high energies. The LHC spans a range of energies that allowed for the Higgs boson's creation and discovery, and might also allow for the production of other hypothetical particles, such as a stable, feebly interacting WIMP. If so, its interactions with standard model particles might permit its detection at the LHC. Even if new particles are found at the LHC, supplementary evidence, such as that from dedicated dark matter detectors on the ground or in space, will be required to truly establish that a newly discovered particle constitutes dark matter. Nonetheless, finding WIMPs at the LHC would certainly be a major accomplishment. We might even learn detailed properties of the dark matter particle that would be very difficult to study with either of the other detection methods. However, dark matter particles wouldn't interact a lot with the protons that collide at the LHC, since dark matter has such tiny interactions with ordinary matter. Even so, other particles might be produced that decay into them. The question then would be, how to establish that this has occurred, since dark matter doesn't interact with the detector and therefore in itself leaves no visible evidence. One place to look would be in the decay of charged particles. The charged particles won't decay solely into neutral dark matter particles because this process wouldn't conserve charge. By detecting the additional charged particles that must be present in the final state, which won't carry the same energy and momentum of the initially decaying particle since unseen dark matter has carried some away, the existence of a feebly interacting particle with a particular set of interactions might be established. The sign that dark matter had been produced would be precisely the energy that experiments failed to detect, along with an agreement of predictions for event rates and signals with data. Unless the laws of physics are radically different than anyone believes, the apparent lack of energy and momentum conservation could only be interpreted as the production of an undetected particle, which might then be attributable to dark matter. WIMPs, despite their tiny interaction with ordinary matter, can also be directly produced in pairs. Two colliding protons might sometimes produce two WIMPs, in the reverse process of two WIMPs annihilating to produce ordinary matter, the calculation that leads to the relic abundance result. How often this occurs depends on the particular model. After all, WIMPs didn't necessarily annihilate into protons, so the reverse process isn't guaranteed either. But for many models, this can be a good way to search. Again, experimenters have to address the problem that dark matter itself is never detected, only other particles produced along with it. But experimenters can see events where a single particle like a photon or a gluon, the particle that communicates the strong nuclear force among quarks, gets produced along with dark matter, and theorists have demonstrated that these searches could in principle involve a big enough signal. So far, LHC studies have not found anything indicative of dark matter's production. Physicists don't know whether this is because the machine's energy is a little too low, or because the theoretical considerations suggesting that additional particles will be found at these energies are misguided. But there is still a reasonable chance of finding additional particles at the energies the LHC collisions will produce. Maybe one of these will be dark matter. Looking for less wimpy dark matter. WIMPs, unlike Obi-Wan Kenobi, are not our only hope, though as far as these detection methods are concerned, they are in many ways our best one. Direct detection works only when there is some interaction between standard model and dark matter particles, and WIMP models guarantee that possibility. Furthermore, thermal production guarantees equal amounts of dark matter and anti-dark matter, or that dark matter is its own antiparticle, so that annihilation is not out of the question either. But what about the other suggestions for dark matter? How do we look for those? Unfortunately, any other dark matter candidate that hasn't already been ruled out will most likely be even more difficult to find. The search strategy has to be specific to the particular model. Accessibility with current technology is not necessarily guaranteed. Maybe we'll be lucky and dark matter won't be transparent. It will be diaphanous, just barely visible to these methods that optimistically assume some interaction with standard model forces. But, given the uncertainties, my opinion is that it's time to focus more on detection through the one force we know is present for dark matter, gravity. Dark matter interacting with itself or with other invisible matter might not show up directly, but we will now see that its interactions might reveal themselves through the exact distribution of mass in the universe. Chapter 18. Socially Connected Dark Matter. Urbanization has been vital to many of the advances in modern life. Put enough people together, and ideas bloom, economies flourish, and abundant benefits emerge. Cities develop organically as they expand, becoming yet more attractive as people move in, create jobs, and establish better working and living conditions. But once a city becomes too dense, expensive housing, crime, or other urban predicaments frequently drive people out into more sparsely settled neighborhoods, or even farther away, outside the city altogether. The rest of the city might grow as planned, but overly optimistic real estate developers' ambitions will be frustrated by the inadequately populated high-rise buildings of the inner cities that defied earlier projections of very rapid growth. And without stable urban centers, suburban communities won't flourish either, in which case mall developers will be disappointed too. It turns out the same general pattern might apply to the growth of structure in the universe. I've explained our current understanding of dark matter and the many observations and predictions that convince us that dark matter and ordinary matter interact with each other at most very weakly. Numerical simulations based on dark matter that interact solely gravitationally predict the size, density, concentration, and shapes of galaxies and clusters of galaxies. As with the predictions for large-scale urban growth, predictions of large-scale structure in the universe agree with observations extremely well. But precise numerical simulations assuming the usual dark matter properties don't always match observed density profiles on smaller scales. The central regions of galaxies and galaxy clusters and the number of smaller dwarf galaxies near the Milky Way don't agree with theoretical predictions. As with less densely populated inner cities and underdeveloped suburbs, the projected densities for the centers of galaxies and the predicted numbers of satellite galaxies are both too high. The dwarf galaxies in Andromeda and other galaxies don't match the predicted spatial distribution either. It might turn out that simulations are inadequate or observations are still too incomplete, but disagreements between predictions and observations of structure on small scales might also suggest that dark matter is different than is currently assumed. Perhaps dark matter is not so very weakly interacting after all. Though interactions between dark matter and ordinary matter are known to be tiny, the interactions between a dark matter particle and another dark matter particle can be fairly large. Such self-interactions are less constrained by the absence of dark matter detection, which tests only for interactions between dark matter and ordinary matter. They might be big enough to merit some attention. Though we can now confirm the basic ideas about the growth of structure in the universe, possible discrepancies indicate that the science hasn't advanced sufficiently to consider the topic closed. For researchers, this is the optimal situation. We are bound to learn a lot, whatever the resolution. This chapter explains the issues with the universe's structure on smaller scales, and why self-interacting dark matter could address them. Small-scale issues. Chapter 5 explained how gravity acting on dark matter lays out a blueprint that determined the universe's structure. Dark matter in the early universe developed increasingly large density fluctuations, and galaxies grew in the denser regions, which exerted the most gravitational pull. Once formed, galaxies merged into clusters located along sheets and filaments, and these formed the scaffolding on which other structures were built. Although the details of each individual galaxy or cluster depend on the unknown initial state, astronomers predict the overall statistical properties of galaxy and galaxy cluster distributions, and most of those predictions match observations very well. However, predictions for small-scale structure, structure on the scale of dwarf galaxies, are not nearly so reliable. Calculations of the density in the innermost portion of galaxies are too high, and predictions for the number of small dwarf galaxies orbiting the Milky Way are too big. Observers don't find the very large number of smaller structures, both inside the larger halos and in isolated smaller halos that, according to this hierarchical picture, should persist until today. Perhaps the most well-known discrepancy is known as the core-cusp problem. Astronomers and cosmologists predict not only the type of objects that should exist in the universe, but also how matter should be distributed within them. Predictions for these density profiles, as the distributions of mass with distance from object centers are known, are cuspy. This means that the dark matter density is predicted to peak rather sharply toward the centers, leading to very dense central regions of galaxies and galaxy clusters. But observers measure density distributions to some extent, and fail to confirm this prediction. In fact, according to what they have measured so far, most galaxies are not cuspy, and exhibit instead what is known as chord profiles. See figure 37 on the enhanced portion of this audiobook for a graphic. This term is confusing, and not only because the Samsung Galaxy Core was the name of a smartphone. Most people probably think of a core as being dense, as is true of the Earth's molten core, for example. A chord density profile refers to the opposite situation, chord in the sense that matter in the center is removed, as when you excise a core from an apple. Of course, no one is removing the entire center of a galaxy, but observations indicate that matter densities aren't peaked nearly as strongly near the centers of galaxies as predicted. Instead, the central region's density profiles are relatively flat in these chord regions. The same might be true of galaxy clusters. Explaining why density profiles look flat or chord and not cuspy, as per dark matter predictions, is an important challenge to the simplest dark matter models. This, along with the missing satellite problem, fewer dwarf galaxies than predicted orbiting around bigger central galaxies, and the too-big-to-fail problem, a related issue in which the predictions for the densest, most massive galaxies do not agree with observations, possibly point to inadequacies of the standard cold dark matter paradigm. Another even more recently noted problem with dark matter predictions, one that the type of dark disk model that I'll soon get to might address, is that the satellite dwarf galaxies found orbiting around larger galaxies don't seem to have the spatial distribution that astronomers would have anticipated, whereas the expectation was that dwarf satellite galaxies would be distributed more or less spherically in all directions. About half of the approximately 30 dwarf galaxies found orbiting the Andromeda Galaxy lie roughly in a plane, and those in the plane almost all have a common orbital direction. A similarly odd distribution is found for some of the dwarf galaxies orbiting the Milky Way. The close alignment and common rotational direction of the dwarf galaxies might indicate they originated from the disks of merging galaxies. However, even if mergers explain the spatial distribution, the dwarf satellite galaxies problematically seem to contain far too much dark matter for the simplest explanation to be correct. A non-standard model of dark matter might be called for to explain the dark matter-dominated dwarf galaxies distributed along a plane. For all these reported discrepancies, the numerical and observational results are preliminary. At least some of these problems could disappear if our assumptions, observations, or simulations prove to be unreliable. More accurate simulations might demonstrate the imprecision of the initial results or an inadequate understanding of ordinary matter's implications, such as supernovae feedback on structure formation, in which case conventional dark matter models will suffice to explain the universe's observed structure even without any modifications to dark matter properties. But if the problems persist, the remaining disagreements could turn into real liabilities for the simplest dark matter models and demonstrate the need for more intricate dark matter properties. When reflecting on these results, it is perhaps heartening to remind ourselves that until well into the 1990s, early simulations, which neglected dark energy, also gave rise to predictions that didn't match data. Many scientists similarly thought then that the early simulations and observations were deceptive, and further improvements in data and predictions would reconcile the results. It was a tribute to these early calculations and an indication that accurate predictions can portend new insights that the discrepancies were eliminated once the effect on structure formation of dark energy, an entirely new discovery, was taken into account. Perhaps these current quandaries regarding small-scale structure will similarly be resolved only with a new discovery about the underlying physical properties of matter and energy in the universe. Observational and computational advances in the next decade will determine if this is indeed the case. Possible implications. Despite the absence of definite confirmation, a number of astrophysicists and cosmologists have started taking the discrepancies seriously and have been investigating the possibility that dark matter does have interactions aside from gravitational. Some go even further and speculate that Einstein's equations of gravity are not quite correct. Despite the attention a few physicists pay to modifications of gravity, I find this more extreme option to be highly unlikely. The evidence for ordinary gravity acting on dark matter that I described earlier on is just too convincing. Most constraining is the difficulty of explaining observations like that of the Bullitt cluster. This and other similar objects, consisting of galaxy clusters that have merged to leave interacting gas in the middle and dark matter in the outer regions that has simply passed through, would be difficult to explain by anything other than feebly interacting dark matter acting in accordance with the usual gravity equations. In any event, before considering a radical alternative with no consistent theoretical underpinning, we should first consider other more boring reasons that predictions might give misleading results, such as ordinary matter playing a bigger role than simulations have assumed, or dark matter being different than determined by conventional expectations. I recently attended two conferences where issues with small-scale structure and their possible resolutions were discussed. The first was a small workshop that my particle physics colleagues at the Harvard Physics Department had organized on the topic of self-interacting dark matter. Astrophysicists from the Harvard Center for Astrophysics organized the second conference, titled Dark Matter Debates, which took place the following spring in 2014. Fortunately, the debates were about substance and not opinions, which, when overemphasized, can derail many a scientific discussion. One reason I found these conferences so worthwhile was the ample opportunity they provided for conversations among physics and astronomy colleagues at Harvard. The Center for Astrophysics, where the astronomers work, was built in 1847 on the highest point in Cambridge to house the largest telescope in the world of its time, a paltry 15 inches in diameter. The location, which persists even though the telescope's scientific standing does not, keeps astronomers and physicists a mile apart, so we never accidentally meet each other at the water cooler or the coffee machine. The conferences brought us and many visiting physicists and astronomers to the same place. But the primary merit of the conferences was that the results that were presented were original and very new. The topics included interesting evidence for small-scale structure problems and the possible resolutions, which conference participants argued could be either an inadequate appreciation of the role of ordinary matter or something truly novel, like dark matter self-interactions. The speakers who discussed why ordinary matter could influence the formation of structure on small scales argued that the inclusion of ordinary matter in numerical simulations, the most prosaic possibility, might go a long way toward resolving the discrepancies between predictions and observations. Initial simulations assumed that dark matter dominates the dynamics and the growth of structure, whereas ordinary matter simply falls into the gravitational potential wells that dark matter creates. Though it might light up the more massive, denser regions after stars have formed, Ordinary matter's influence was neglected apart from this role as a spotlight on dense dark matter locations. Physicists initially thought that ordinary matter wouldn't significantly affect the growth of structure, and furthermore, was too computationally imposing to reliably include anyway. Even today, when astronomers do try to include the effects of ordinary matter, a good deal of uncertainty remains. With existing memory and computing power, no one can simulate everything in detail, so astronomers doing simulations need to use approximations and assumptions. However, the limited numerical simulations currently underway that take account of ordinary matter do seem to alleviate the discrepancies. A couple of effects account for the improved agreement between simulations and observations. Standard matter interacts through forces aside from gravity, so even though its initial gravitational influence is relatively small, its impact on structure, especially on smaller scales, might not be. For example, one potential explanation for the paucity of observed satellites is that they are just too faint. Intergalactic gas can be heated when ultraviolet radiation, stuff relating to ordinary matter, is emitted from stars. Once this happens, halos, particularly small ones, will be less effective at accreting gas. But if halos don't have enough gas, they won't form stars, which could leave them too dim to observe with current telescopes. Another proposed explanation for the paucity of observed satellite galaxies and sparser-than-expected inner galaxy cores is that supernova explosions expel material out of the inner portions of their host galaxies, leaving behind a far less dense inner core. The resulting dark matter distribution might be compared to that of an urban population in its densest inner city regions, where, in the aftermath of unrest, explosions of violence have stemmed the growth to leave a depleted core. The inner galaxy that has seen too much supernova outflow doesn't grow in density toward the center any more than would a sparsely occupied inner city. Furthermore, the energy released by supernova explosions can ionize and heat the gas in the outer regions of a galaxy. That can blow away a lot of the ordinary matter that might have condensed into dwarf satellite galaxies that rotate around a bigger one, or hinder the collapse into dense regions that are required for star formation. These outer dwarf galaxies would have proportionately less ordinary matter and would be fainter, making them far more difficult to find. The evidence for and against a big role for ordinary matter in small-scale structure is constantly evolving as methods and computing power consistently improve. Several animated discussions broke out at the conferences, though, as noted by a particle physics colleague, the tone among the astronomers was pleasantly conciliatory, with everyone trying to find the right answers and not just beating home a point. Even those who emphasized the importance of ordinary matter acknowledged that it won't suffice to eliminate all discrepancies if the smallest scale problems persist in isolated dwarf galaxies, where supernova feedback is expected to be very weak. If that is the case, as current observations suggest, something beyond ordinary dark matter will be called for. Although everyone at the conferences agreed that ordinary matter can go in the right direction to help resolve disagreements between simulations and data, the physicists and astronomers who were present all recognized that incorrect predictions for satellite galaxies might well suggest a more radical modification of the standard non-interacting dark matter paradigm. Self-interacting dark matter. Given the intriguing issues that have arisen when simulations have confronted data, it is interesting to consider alternative dark matter models that might address them. The most intriguing possibility is that the assumption of simple non-interacting dark matter is misguided, and dark matter interactions apart from gravitational influence structure. Considering this possibility helps physicists learn more about dark matter particles' interactions among themselves and what new forces might act on them. Ongoing measurements and improving simulations will tell us more about the nature of dark matter, no matter what the results turn out to be. Even if discrepancies don't survive, we will better understand the nature of dark matter and how dark matter and ordinary matter contribute to cosmic structure. But if disagreements persist, they might well be evidence for self-interactions. Self-interacting dark matter is a promising new suggestion, in part because we know so little about dark matter's properties. Just as ordinary matter can experience non-gravitational forces, such as electromagnetism, so too might dark matter. although the usual assumption is that dark matter experiences gravitational interactions and possibly very feeble interactions with ordinary matter, our not having directly detected dark matter in experiments tells us nothing about dark matter's interactions with itself. Self-interacting dark matter particles would attract or repel other dark matter particles, but not those of the matter with which we are familiar. Dark matter could experience as yet undetected dark forces, which would influence dark matter particles, but not those of ordinary matter. Because standard forces, such as electromagnetism, act only on ordinary matter and dark forces would act only on dark matter and ordinary matter particles would remain essentially oblivious to each other. Self-interacting dark matter, like ordinary matter, would be social. But it would be cliquish, too, interacting only with its own kind. Dark matter might scatter off other dark matter particles, but ordinary matter would be as invisible to it as dark matter is to ordinary stuff. Since direct detection experiments look only for interactions between dark matter and ordinary matter, such a possibility is not ruled out, and it might even be favored by structure investigations. We don't know what form the new forces will take if dark matter does interact with itself. Even so, forces among dark matter particles are constrained, and dark matter self-interactions cannot be too strong. Recall that the smoking gun signature of dark matter is the bullet cluster formed from merging clusters, as well as other galaxy clusters that take similar form. Gravitational lensing observations tell us that the dark matter from one cluster passed through dark matter from another one essentially unimpeded, leading to two bulbous shapes in the outside regions and gas that remains trapped in the central region in between. If all dark matter very strongly interacted with itself, as ordinary matter does, it would act like the gas and remain in the center. But the bulbous outer regions indicate that dark matter didn't do that and instead passed right through. This doesn't tell us that dark matter can't interact at all, but it does limit the strength and distance scale over which the force can be relevant. The strength of dark matter interactions is constrained, too, by the shapes of galaxy halos, which are also sensitive to dark matter interactions. But these restrictions don't rule out self-interactions as a possibility. They just provide limits on the allowed strength and form. Even allowing for these constraints, self-interactions can in principle be strong enough to address the problems with small-scale structure predictions. Speakers at the conferences showed why self-interactions of dark matter can help with some of the potential structure issues and furthermore lower the core densities of the most massive satellites, yielding better agreement between predictions and observations too. For example, self-interactions could address the problem of too much predicted density in the central region of galaxies. In the absence of non-gravitational interactions, dark matter would keep falling into the center, since dark matter that moves sufficiently slowly gets trapped in the gravitational potential of existing structures, making the density at the center rise dramatically. But repulsive interaction among dark matter particles would keep dark matter particles apart, preventing them from piling in too closely. It would be as if everyone in a packed train station surrounded themselves with their luggage, keeping everyone else at arm's distance. Repulsive interactions among dark matter particles would similarly introduce a protective barrier, keeping dark matter from becoming too dense. Simulations with self-interacting dark matter confirm this intuition, and indeed lead to cored halo shapes, those with relatively constant density inner regions, rather than cuspy ones. The matter density toward the center of a galaxy or a galaxy cluster can only increase so much before it saturates and can't become any denser. Any persistent small-scale structure issues could potentially be resolved if dark matter interacts in this way. The different predictions of self-interacting dark matter for galaxies and for galaxy clusters guarantee that future observations and simulations will tell us a good deal more about dark matter's properties. And, since different models for the interactions make different predictions, comparing simulations to observations should furthermore distinguish among different types of interactions. Only by considering alternatives can we exploit the abundant data about the shape of structures in the universe in order to more fully understand their implications. Maybe dark matter has interactions that affect structure so that simulations will better agree with observations. Or maybe ordinary dark matter does a better job in predicting structure than dark matter with such interactions, allowing us to decisively rule out more elaborate models once the simulations and measurements are truly reliable. Whatever the result, We will learn a lot beyond what the conventional WIMP searches described in the previous chapter will tell us. But interacting dark matter in itself, interesting as it might be, is not precisely the focus of my recent research, which the next chapter will present. After all, interacting and non-interacting dark matter are not the only possibilities. Just as by focusing on black and white, we neglect shades of gray, not to mention polka dots and stripes, assuming that dark matter either all has interactions or that none of it does, leads us to overlook the richness of the world's possibilities. The next chapter will consider the intriguing notion that dark matter, like ordinary matter, is indeed more complex. Perhaps dark matter has a non-interacting component and a self-interacting one too, and both of them contribute to the universe's structure and behavior. Chapter 19. The Speed of Dark. Both casual observers of science and scientists themselves frequently employ Occam's razor for guidance when evaluating scientific proposals. This oft-cited principle says that the simplest theory that explains a phenomenon is most likely to be the best one. Its sensible-sounding logic dictates that it is probably a bad idea to build complicated structures when a leaner one will do. Yet two factors undermine the authority of Occam's razor, or at least suggest caution when using it as a crutch. I've learned the hard way to be wary of crutches, both intellectual and physical. Once when I used the tangible kind to heal a broken ankle, I leaned on them incorrectly and caused nerve damage in my arms. Theories that confirm to the dictates of Occam's razor sometimes similarly address one outstanding problem while creating issues elsewhere, usually in some other aspect of the theory that embraces it. The best science should always encompass, or at the very least be consistent with, the broadest possible range of observations. The real question is, what most effectively solves the entire set of unexplained phenomena? A proposed explanation that seems simple at first might devolve into a Rube Goldberg contraption when confronted with a larger set of issues. On the other hand, an explanation that seemed unduly cumbersome when applied to the original problem might, when seen through the lens of scientific peripheral vision, come to reveal its underlying elegance. My second concern about Occam's razor is just a matter of fact. The world is more complicated than any of us would have been likely to conceive. Some particles and properties don't seem necessary to any physical processes that matter, at least according to what we've deduced so far, yet they exist. Sometimes the simplest model just isn't the correct one. Discussions on this topic emerged many times at the Dark Matter Debates conference mentioned in the previous chapter. In her talk about experimental constraints on unnecessary but testable particles, the particle physicist Natalia Toro argued that a more appropriate guide than Occam's razor would be a principle she called Wilson's scalpel. She named it after the physicist Ken Wilson, who developed a general framework for understanding how to do science by keeping track only of those elements that are testable. Natalia proposed that a scalpel in his name should be used to shape, rather than shave, a theory, leaving all testable elements intact, whether or not we can attribute an underlying purpose. When I spoke next, I jokingly suggested that the principle of Martha's table was a better idea still. After all, you don't set a table with just knives. You set it with everything necessary to eat a meal in a dignified fashion. With the talent of a Martha Stewart, you will retain an organizing principle, no matter how many dishes and silverware you arrange. Science, too, should have a properly set table, one that allows us to address the many phenomena that we observe. Although scientists tend to prefer simple ideas, they are rarely the whole story. This discussion is all by way of prelude to my introducing what my collaborators and I called partially interacting dark matter, which led to the double-disc dark matter category of models, which I will also now explain. Both classes of models acknowledge that the makeup of dark matter might not be so simple. Just as is true of particles of ordinary matter, dark matter particles might not all be the same. New types of dark matter with different types of interactions might exist, and furthermore have observable previously unforeseen consequences. Even if the interacting component turns out to be only a small fraction of the dark matter, it could have important implications for the solar system and the galaxy. It might have had some significance for the dinosaurs, too. Ordinary matter chauvinists. Even though we know that ordinary matter accounts for only about 1/20th of the universe's energy and 1/6th of the total energy of matter, with dark energy constituting the remaining portion, we nonetheless consider ordinary matter to be the truly important constituent. With the exception of cosmologists, almost everyone's attention is focused on the ordinary matter component, which you might have thought to be largely insignificant according to the energy accounting. We, of course, care more about ordinary matter because we are made of the stuff, as is the tangible world in which we live. But we also pay attention because of the richness of its interactions. Ordinary matter interacts through the electromagnetic, the weak, and the strong nuclear forces, allowing the visible matter of our world to form complex, dense systems. Not only stars, but also rocks, oceans, plants, and animals owe their very existence to the non-gravitational forces of nature through which ordinary matter interacts. Just as a beer's small percentage alcohol content affects carousers far more than the rest of the drink, ordinary matter, though carrying a small percentage of the energy density, influences itself and its surroundings much more noticeably than something that just passes through. Familiar visible matter can be thought of as the privileged percent, actually more like 15%, of matter. In business and politics, the interacting 1% dominates decision-making and policy, while the remaining 99% of the population provides less widely acknowledged infrastructure and support, maintaining buildings, keeping cities operational, and getting food to people's tables. Similarly, ordinary matter dominates almost everything we notice, whereas dark matter, in its abundance and ubiquity, helped create clusters and galaxies and facilitated star formation, but has only limited influence on our immediate surroundings. For nearby structure, ordinary matter is in charge. It is responsible for the motion of our bodies, the energy sources that drive our economy, the computer screen or paper on which you are reading this book, and basically anything else you can think of or care about. If something has measurable interactions, it is worth paying attention to, as it will have far more immediate effects on whatever is around. In the usual scenario, dark matter lacks this type of interesting influence and structure. The common assumption is that dark matter is the glue that holds together galaxies and galaxy clusters, but resides only in amorphous clouds around them. But what if this assumption isn't true, and it is only our prejudice, and ignorance, which is after all the root of most prejudice, that led us down this potentially misleading path? What if, like ordinary matter, a fraction of the dark matter interacted too? The standard model contains 6 types of quarks, 3 types of charged leptons, including the electron, 3 species of neutrinos, all the particles responsible for forces, as well as the newly discovered Higgs boson. What if the world of dark matter, if not equally rich, is reasonably wealthy too? In this case, most dark matter interacts only negligibly, but a small component of dark matter would interact under forces reminiscent of those in ordinary matter. The rich and complex structure of the standard model's particles and forces gives rise to many of the world's interesting phenomena. If dark matter has an interacting component, this fraction might be influential too. If we were creatures made of dark matter, we would be very wrong to assume that the particles in our ordinary matter sector were all of the same type. Perhaps we ordinary matter people are making a similar mistake. Given the complexity of the standard model of particle physics, which describes the most basic components of matter we know of, it seems very odd to assume that all of dark matter is composed of only one type of particle. Why not suppose instead that some fraction of the dark matter experiences its own forces? In that case, just as ordinary matter consists of different types of particles, and these fundamental building blocks interact through different combinations of charges, dark matter would also have different building blocks, and at least one of those distinct new particle types would experience non-gravitational interactions. Neutrinos in the standard model don't interact under the strong or electric force, yet the 6 types of quarks do. In a similar fashion, maybe one type of dark matter particle experiences feeble or no interactions aside from gravity, but a fraction of it, perhaps 5%, does. Based on what we've seen in the world of ordinary matter, perhaps this scenario is even more likely than the usual assumption of a single very feebly or non-interacting dark matter particle. People in foreign relations make a mistake when they lump together another country's cultures, assuming they don't exhibit the diversity of societies that is evident in our own. Just as a good negotiator doesn't assume the primacy of one sector of society over another when attempting to place the different cultures on equal footing, an unbiased scientist shouldn't assume that dark matter isn't as interesting as ordinary matter and necessarily lacks a diversity of matter similar to our own. The science writer Corey Powell, when reporting on our research in Discover magazine, started his piece by announcing that he was a light matter chauvinist, and pointing out that virtually everyone else is, too. By this he meant that we view the type of matter we are familiar with as by far the most significant and therefore the most complex and interesting. It's the type of belief that you might have thought was upended by the Copernican Revolution. Yet most people persist in assuming that their perspective and their conviction of our importance are in keeping with the external world. Ordinary matter's many components have different interactions and contribute to the world in different ways. So too might dark matter have different particles with different behaviors that might influence the universe's structure in a measurable fashion. The interacting minority. My collaborators and I called the scenario with a small component of dark matter that interacts through non-gravitational forces partially interacting dark matter. We first investigated the simplest such model, which involves only two components. The dominant component interacts only gravitationally and is the conventional cold dark matter that resides in spherical halos around galaxies and galaxy clusters. The second component interacts gravitationally too, but also through an additional force very similar to electromagnetism. This two-tiered dark matter scenario might sound exotic, but keep in mind that similar statements can be made about ordinary matter. Quarks experience the strong nuclear force, but particles like electrons don't. That is why quarks get bound into protons and neutrons, but electrons do not. Similarly, electrons experience the electromagnetic force to which neutrinos are oblivious. So if we go against our usual chauvinism and allow for similar diversity in the dark world, it shouldn't be impossible to imagine that a portion of the dark sector interacts through forces similar to, but distinct from, the ones through which the stuff we are made of interacts. However, bear in mind that partially interacting dark matter is a little different from standard model matter in that although electrons don't experience the strong force directly, they do interact with quarks and therefore experience indirect effects. The newly proposed form of dark matter might instead be entirely isolated in its interactions, with the bulk of dark matter not even experiencing indirect effects of the newly introduced dark force. Since we don't yet know whether components of dark matter should interact, or whether dark matter is even composed of different types of particles, the first and simplest assumption would be that there are no other new interactions aside from the new form of electromagnetism, and only the newly introduced charged particles experience this force. In this scenario, the bulk of the dark matter wouldn't experience the new force at all. For fun, I'll call the force that is experienced by the interacting dark matter component dark light, or more generally, I'll call it dark electromagnetism. The names are chosen to remind us that the new type of dark matter experiences a force like electromagnetism, but one that is invisible to the ordinary matter of our world. Whereas ordinary matter carries charge so that it emits and absorbs photons, the newly introduced component of dark matter would emit and absorb only this new type of light, which ordinary matter simply doesn't experience. This dark electromagnetic force would be analogous to the usual electromagnetic force, but it would be an entirely different influence acting on particles charged under a distinct additional force that is communicated by an entirely new type of particle, a dark photon, if you will. Though the new component of dark matter wouldn't interact with ordinary matter, it would have self-interactions that would make it behave similarly to familiar matter, which, after all, doesn't interact with dark matter either. Both ordinary matter and dark matter would carry charge and experience forces, but those charges and forces would be distinct. The particles that carry charge under the new dark force would be attracted or repelled by each other in a way that is similar to the behavior of ordinary charged particles. But the dark sector's interactions would be transparent to ordinary matter, since dark matter interacts through its own unique form of light, not through the light with which we are familiar. Only dark matter particles would experience the new force's influence. Even while obeying similar laws of physics, and maybe being in close proximity in space, dark matter and normal matter would each occupy their own worlds. Ordinary matter and dark matter could even physically overlap without ever interacting, because they would interact with each other through distinct forces. Aside from their extremely feeble gravitational influence, the charged ordinary matter and charged dark matter would be oblivious to each other's presence. Two types of electrically charged particles in the same place that don't interact with each other is really not so mysterious. It's a bit like ordinary matter interacts via Facebook, whereas the charged matter of the partially interacting dark matter model interacts on Google+. Their interactions are similar, but they have contact only with those on their own social network. Interactions proceed on one network or the other, but usually not on both. Going further afield to make an analogy, it's like left-wing and right-wing TV shows, which follow more or less the same rules of programming and can both be broadcast on a single television, but which are entirely different entities, each reinforcing their own confirmation biases. Though they have similar formats, with interview hosts, guest experts, graphic formats illustrating their points, and running news alerts on random unrelated topics underneath, the actual content and outcomes, as well as the advertisers for the two types of shows, are nonetheless very different. Very few, if any, guests or issues will appear on both types of show, and the products and candidates they advocate will be different too. Just as it's only rare individuals who both watch Fox News and listen to NPR, most or perhaps all particles interact via one force or the other. The model, like the media, encourages sticking to one point of view. Though in principle there can be intermediary particles that interact via forces of both types, most particles carry either one type of charge or the other, and therefore don't communicate with each other. To be fair, it wasn't only prejudice that discouraged physicists from thinking about a new type of electromagnetism that dark matter would experience. Interactions have consequences that often can be tested. Physicists shied away from the idea of dark forces and self-interacting dark matter because they thought such scenarios were constrained or even ruled out. However, as explained in Chapter 18, even if all of dark matter experiences those forces, those constraints are not so severe, but interactions are allowed only within prescribed limits based on observations. However, the situation is much less constrained if only a small portion of the dark matter self-interacts. Recall the two types of limits on self-interactions. The first had to do with the structure of halos themselves. They had to be spherical, with a little non-uniformity, known as triaxial structure. The second concerned galaxy cluster mergers, such as the most famous one known as the Bullitt cluster, which was the result of merging clusters. The gas visibly remains in the central region, but dark matter, observed through gravitational lensing, passed through unhindered to create two external bulbous structures, a bit like Mickey Mouse's ears. Both constraints are most significant when all of the dark matter interacts, but neither tells us much if the interacting component constitutes only a small fraction of the dark matter. If only a small component interacts, most of the halo will be spherical. The interactions won't wipe out the triaxial structure either, unless it is the dominant component or scatters more than can be expected. Similarly, the fractions of gas and dark matter in the Bullitt cluster are not nearly sufficiently well measured to register a tiny component of dark matter, which, after all, comprises only a small fraction of the galaxy cluster. That component might interact and remain in the central region along with the gas, and no one would be any the wiser for it. Perhaps, eventually, measurements such as those of the Bullitt cluster will become sufficiently precise to constrain the partially interacting scenario I'm describing. Certainly now, partially interacting dark matter remains a viable and promising possibility. The spark. My impetus for considering this idea, along with Matthew Rees, a recent young addition to the Harvard physics faculty, and two postdoctoral fellows, Gigi Fan and Andrew Katz, was not entirely direct. As with many other research projects that turn out to be the most interesting, we weren't aiming to study what ultimately became our major focus. Rather, we were trying to understand some intriguing data from the Fermi satellite, the NASA space observatory that scans the sky for gamma rays, which are a more energetic version of light than visible light or even X-rays. Most astrophysical processes produce radiation with a smooth distribution over a broad range of frequencies, meaning the number of photons doesn't change dramatically at any particular wavelength. So when Christoph Beneger from the University of Amsterdam and his collaborators noticed an excess of radiation in the Fermi data all concentrated at a single frequency, it sparked our interest and that of many others in the physics and astronomy communities. The spike in the density of radiation, here radiation just means photons or light, that Beneger and his collaborators had identified, appeared to emerge from the center of the galaxy, where dark matter is more highly concentrated, but where no such signal from ordinary astrophysical sources should arise. In the absence of a more conventional explanation, or a mistake, a spike in the photon number could only represent something new. The most intriguing suggestion was that the signal could be the result of dark matter annihilating into photons, an indirect detection signal of the sort that was described in Chapter 17. Maybe dark matter particles collided with each other and through the magic of E equals mc squared turned into photons that the Fermi satellite could then detect. Further support for this suggestion was that the energy of the photons at which the excess was observed was in the range expected for dark matter. It was also close in value to that of the Higgs boson mass, the mass of the recently discovered missing piece of the particle physics standard model, perhaps indicating an even deeper connection. The third intriguing aspect of the measurement was that the interaction rate agreed with what it takes to get the right dark matter relic density. Just about the right amount of dark matter would remain today if dark matter annihilated at the rate that had been measured. Despite these rosy signs, however, a few things seemed badly off if indeed the signal originated in dark matter. Dark matter doesn't produce photons directly, since it doesn't interact with light. Maybe dark matter interacts with some heavy charged particle that we haven't yet observed, and those particles in turn interact with light. But if that were the case, we would have expected that when dark matter annihilates and turns into energy, that energy would produce charged particles too. But the Fermi satellite detected no sign of such a process. The other problem was that although the total amount of dark matter depends on how much it annihilates to anything, the signal depends only on the amount it annihilates to photons. Given the amount of dark matter density in the universe, the annihilation rate to photons turned out to be too small in all but the most finely tuned models. This meant that this particular dark matter explanation of the signal could only even possibly be consistent in a very narrow range of parameters that would permit a large enough rate of annihilation to photons, but no measurable annihilation into charged particles. No credible scenario seemed to make this happen. Gigi Andre Matt and I viewed this as an interesting opportunity to explore the range of permissible dark matter models. We wanted to know if there was any reasonable example in which all the rates agree with their measured values. We began by focusing on the Fermi result and asking whether we could think of a way that nature could do better than the models other physicists had already suggested. We were fully aware that the data might turn out to have been misleading. The Fermi results were tantalizing, but were not sufficiently strong to make a decisive case for a new signal with an origin in dark matter or otherwise. The observations might have simply reflected some statistical fluke or a misunderstanding of the apparatus rather than a true signal of a new physical process, which, to stem any overly high expectations as you read this, turned out to be the case. But the observation was sufficiently interesting that, especially early on, it warranted asking whether any reasonable physical process could have created it. After all, looking for exotic new forms of matter is tough. We want to be aware of every possible way of finding them. Whether or not this signal would prove to be correct, we might learn something that could be useful in the future. The four of us worked at my blackboard, trying out a number of ideas designed to cleverly escape the problems while preserving the desirable features of the signal. But none of our proposals worked well enough to be worth pursuing. The ones that succeeded in satisfying all the constraints were inconsistent with the spirit of Occam's razor. Worse still, they wouldn't be allowed anywhere in the vicinity of a properly set table of ideas. However, one of the models that we rejected triggered a line of thinking that was ultimately much more interesting than anything we had initially set out to do. Our initial inquiries were all based on trying to find a particular model that we could shoehorn into existing constraints. But we took a step back and asked ourselves, What if the local dark matter was denser than we thought, so that we were in fact misinterpreting the implications? What if dark matter could annihilate much more than expected because of this greater density? With higher density, dark matter particles could find and interact with each other much more efficiently. This in turn would create a bigger signal that would more readily stand up to observations. Just as you are more likely to bump into someone in New York's Penn Station at rush hour than you are in the Waterbury, Vermont train station at 9 a.m. on a Sunday, one dark matter particle is more likely to interact with another dark matter particle in a dense matter environment than in the usual diffuse environment of the amorphous halo. If some dark matter were more concentrated than the matter in the halo, all the other constraints could be much more readily satisfied. The question, then, is the underlying reason. Why would dark matter, or at least some of the dark matter, be denser than we thought? This is where the idea of partially interacting dark matter came about, together with the dark disk idea that closely follows. In fact, even though we now are pretty sure the Fermi signal is spurious, this new idea has so many unexplored implications that it was independently worth pursuing. One of these is a disk of dark matter with far greater density than is usually assumed. The dark disk. Once when I was cleaning my house, well, letting my Roomba robotic vacuum cleaner do its thing, I emptied the dust tray and found an old fortune cookie paper I had saved. The paper asked an enigmatic question: what is the speed of dark? I didn't know then that the words were indeed a sort of fortune, in that they more or less prophesied the research project I was about to commence. Chapter 5 explained that ordinary matter is found in a thin, dense disk because it sheds energy, which it does by emitting photons that efficiently carry it away. The consequence of dissipation of energy is slower, cooler matter particles that don't make the kind of big excursions that would be expected from hotter, more energetic, high-velocity ones. Matter collapse happens because with less energy, it has less velocity with which to spread out. Ordinary matter, which dissipates energy and thereby lowers its speed, collapses into a disk, like the disk of the Milky Way, which you can see on a clear, dry night. After my collaborators and I had unleashed the notion of partially interacting dark matter, we pursued its potential consequences for the Milky Way galaxy and beyond. We assumed that interacting dark matter is present, and that it behaves similarly to ordinary charged matter, which we know in the galaxy cools, slows down, and thereby forms a disk. Only a small fraction of the dark matter interacts in our scenario, so the bulk of the dark matter would still form a spherical halo, consistent with what astronomers have so far observed. However, the new component of interacting dark matter could dissipate energy, so it, like ordinary matter, could cool down and form a disk too. The interacting dark matter component would, via dark photon interactions, radiate away energy and lower its velocity. In this respect, it would behave very much like ordinary matter. Just as ordinary matter cools and collapses, the interacting component of dark matter would as well. And because of conserved angular momentum, which prevents collapse in all but the vertical direction, the interacting dark matter would collapse into a disk as well. Furthermore, just as ordinary atoms are composed of protons and electrons with opposite charges, this component of dark matter would also contain oppositely charged particles. The charged particles would continue to radiate energy until they became cool enough to get bound into dark atoms. The cooling would then become much slower, and the dark matter atoms, like the atoms of normal matter, would reside in a disk whose thickness would be related to the temperature at which atomic binding occurred. With reasonable assumptions, the temperatures of the ordinary and dark components after cooling stops should turn out to be comparable. So we would be left with a disk of dark matter and a disk of ordinary matter whose temperatures would be about the same. However, the dark disk wouldn't have exactly the same structure as the usual Milky Way disk. In fact, it might even be more interesting. The remarkable property of the dark disk is that if a dark matter particle is heavier than a proton but has the same temperature, the dark disk will be thinner, narrower in width than that of the Milky Way. The energy a particle carries is associated with its temperature, but kinetic energy is also related to mass and velocity. Heavier particles with the same temperature will have lower velocity in order for the energy to be about the same, so bigger masses lead to thinner disks. For a dark matter particle with mass about 100 times heavier than the proton, a commonly assumed value for dark matter masses, the disk would be about 100 times thinner even than the narrow disk of the Milky Way, a remarkable possibility, which, as we will see in the next